The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
I'm joined by Julie Jay, stand-up comedian, commended by Tommy Tiernan as being her show being one of the funniest things he's seen in a long time. Not often you get quotes like that from a comedian as legendary as Tommy Tiernan. But not only is Julie Jay a comedian, she is also a working teacher, which I always figure must in some way be conflicting. Julie, how are you?
I'm good, Anton. How are you?
Good. What do you do for, you know, the way whenever you talk to comedians, normally about 60% of them will say that in school they began to find their talent for comedy because they made other people laugh and that made them popular and yada, yada, yada. If you are a teacher and you are meant to be controlling discipline, yet you see young child distracting the class with their humour, do you feel conflicted?
Well, I do feel conflicted in the sense that I always feel like, hang on now a second, there's only room for one comedian in this room. I feel very threatened in my role as a comedian when a student is funny, which happens a lot because the students usually are funnier than me, to be honest. But I think the nature of, like, you know, it's a bit of a Clark Kent position whereby I was trying to keep the comedy under wraps for a long time. And then obviously you can't now because everything's online. So I think you have to just, instead of it writing yourself into existence, you have to kind of embrace the fact that I'm never going to be much of a disciplinarian. Like, you know, they see your stuff on TikTok, they know you're a bit scatty, a bit all over the shop. Like, I think you have to go with that and just kind of lean into it a bit. So there's no point, whether it's a comedy stage or classroom, going into a classroom and pretending you're someone you're not. So I think they know where the chips fall with me.
Do they provide useful material? I would have thought being trapped in a room with 20 or 30 children and teens, you have to be able to farm that for comedy.
Oh, for sure. They're great for the material. And, you know, I actually think in a way, because they only went back teaching last year, and like a few people maybe were surprised because, you know, I guess I am busy enough with the comedy. And I did joke at the time, you know, the reason I went back teaching is because I love comedy, but I also love mortgage approval. But I mean, there was an element to that, but also I really love being back and having the crack. And I think there's an element of with comedy, and you know, I'm certainly nowhere near that level, but I think if you reach a certain level of success, like maybe the relatability becomes a little bit harder. Like, there's no point saying my butler said the funniest thing to me the other day. So it's actually kind of nice even being in a work environment, hanging out in a staff room and just jotting down what everyone's saying.
Although I think Seinfeld has done a relatively good job, or has he, of negotiating that line, because Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee was largely him showing up in Lamborghinis dripping with his own personal wealth, but still cracking gags.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose, look, no, it doesn't matter how successful you are. Like, we're all human at the end of the day. But I suppose comedy, stand-up comedy itself, it does, like, I guess it only works when there is that relatability to an extent. You know, when somebody sees themselves in the joke. So I guess like that with, you know, comedians in cars getting coffee. Like, it's, you know, it is just that people see themselves in these people as well.
What about the online stuff and how much content it hoovers up? Because one of the great things was back in the day when you weren't posting things online, you come up with the 15-minute set. You can then run that on and on and on in various different venues. Hell, you can do it the same venue different nights depending on the audience. Once, presumably, you put something online, that's it burned, is it?
Oh, it's dead. Yeah, it's burnt. And I think that's why, because actually a lot of people have said to me, and you know, it's an interesting one, because I think there's a lot of discussion now about the amount of crowd work comedians do. And like a lot of clips you see online are crowd work. And people are kind of, you know, people have said to me, God, is anyone really kind of sticking to the old format of just jokes? It seems like now people, you know, are really relying on crowd work. But I think the reason people put the crowd work clips online is exactly that, that you're not necessarily burning material. So, I mean, once you've put something up, that's it. It's gone, done and dusted. And you really can't be expecting people to pay to go to a show to see a joke when they can see it for free on TikTok. So I think there is an element of it. But also I think it's kind of exciting as well, because I know when you put stuff up, it forces you to come up with new stuff. So I think that's really good as well, because it kind of makes you sign off. Like, you're no longer referencing things that are, you know, kind of by the way. Like, it keeps you current.
What do you do about joke theft? Because the reason I ask, right? I'm always wary of when people say, oh, you nicked that joke. Well, you think, well, a lot of people arrive at the same kind of things all the time, and you might have been privy to the same kind of information, and who knows if you didn't arrive at it independently. But if you and Fred are living together, Fred Cook, of course, also, I'm not telling you this, you know who your
current husband
is.
Yeah.
Husband number one, Fred Cook.
Presumed father of my children, but like, you can never be 100%. Yes.
Well, if you and he are having a chat over at the dining room table and something is amusing to you, who owns that? Do you have to say, Hank, this is mine?
This happens all the time. Like, I'm constantly mentioning copyright law, like, in this house. It's an absolute nightmare, because there's an element of, and this is why I think so many comedy partnerships kind of don't really stand the test of time. I guess similar to musical partnerships, there's an element of who wrote the song or who wrote the joke. So somebody comes up with the melody, the other person comes up with the lyrics. It's such a tricky one that it is absolutely no wonder that most people end up like the Gallagher brothers, whereby they're just, you know, they're purely doing it for the dollar at this stage. It's really, really tricky. And I know I always laugh, because sometimes I will try out a joke on Fred in the kitchen and he gives me terrible advice. So he will say, yeah, that's great. And then I go out and I do the joke and it completely bombs. So I think he is trying to sabotage my career. But equally, when I give him stuff, I find it always kills. And I don't know. I feel since we've started going out together and getting married and all the rest, I think his material has improved exponentially. Based on my input. Yes.
Yeah, you're a significantly better joke writer than Ben.
Oh,
I mean, this has always been the,
stop. No,
the consensus of popular opinion.
Do you know what he said, which was so funny, because we're back to school this week. Obviously, I'm back in school because I'm teaching, but also our little fella started junior infants this week. And I will say, Fred does crack me up, because we went in and there's only 10 in his class. And we went in the first day and he said, there's only 10 people here. I feel like I'm at one of my own gigs. And we laughed and laughed. And then in the same breath, he was saying to another parent, you know, last year in the Nina, they had 25. I didn't know what to do with myself. I've never seen that many people in the one room. So we were all laughing. So he definitely is very, very funny. I will say that about him. He's good at the jokes.
How did you find the trauma of your little fella going to school? Difficult?
Oh, Anton, do you know what? I thought I'd be a wreck on day one. And I was grand on day one, because, you know, on day one, there's a lot of fanfare. There's a lot of let's get a picture, all of that. Day two was the one that I wasn't prepared for. Like, you know, you rock up on day two and it is a case of, oh, wow, I think the penny really dropped at me that this is it now for the next few years. And I was quite emotional about it. I didn't think I would be, but just coming back to the house and the baby was looking for his brother and, you know, he was crying, I was crying. I said, we'll go for a baby chino, because if you drink wine at that hour of the morning, like, you know.
Well,
baby
shouldn't drink wine at any time of the morning, Julie.
Yes. So I feel morning full stop. Wine shouldn't be in the same sentence. So instead we went off for baby chino to cheer ourselves up on day two. But I was very emotional about it. And I think the fact that he couldn't wait to get in there, I find quite cutting as well. Because I literally had to manhandle him for a picture.
There's something in that. I think when you go past schools and you look at the parents of junior infants kids, they all say, how do you handle the separation anxiety? And what do you do when the child cries? But actually the bigger question is, what do you do when the child doesn't cry and effectively says, ma or da, shag off, couldn't care less, want to play with my friends? They all look devastated when it happens. They all want a good cry.
You know what? You have hit the nail on the head, because I was preparing myself for the emotions and sure he was quite, like, he was actually running away from me. And I did have a moment on the first day. I said, this is not the first time a West Kerry man has ran away from me at such speed. Like, he was literally like, thank God I can get away from this woman. So it was a bit, you know, you don't want them to be upset, but like, you want them to kind of care that they're leaving you behind. I mean, like, it's just, especially because he was a COVID baby. So we were essentially stuck to each other for like 5 years. And yeah, he had enough. He just couldn't wait to get in there.
Well, now that he is in school, can I give you the horrifying thing that I learned yesterday on the show?
Oh, no. Yeah. Tell me.
You know about head lice?
Oh, right? No. Stop.
Here's what
already.
I discovered yesterday. And if you missed this, by the way, if you go on newstalk.com, you can listen back on the podcast. It turns out, and I thought this was amazing, head lice change color to match the color of the hair that they're born in. So if you get a head louse and you've got brown hair, you'll have a brown louse. If you've got blonde hair, you'll get a... They even make them in red, apparently. This horrified me. I just want you to know.
That is the stuff of nightmares. Oh, that is just devastating. I'm going back to bed. I really am now. I'm going back to bed with a glass of wine after hearing that news.
Well, just so you know, head lice can also survive up to 2 days on a pillow. Just warning you.
No!
Just so you're aware. Come here. Has Fred kept up the dancing? Do you come home every now and then and find him cutting up the rug?
Well, he does love to dance to such an extent that, you know, bedtime is an absolute nightmare here because he will throw on the music and they'll be having a disco and I will have to put both himself and the children to bed. He's great at the dancing. I'm horrendous. I'm a bit of a Madonna. I can't move my legs and arms at the same time. So, he's great, but I'm just horrendous. Like, even for our first dance at the wedding, it was just me standing, not moving my feet, and Fred kind of break dancing on the floor. That suited me fine.
Have you tried Irish dancing? Because it doesn't require, I don't think, the combination of both.
I did try Irish dancing as a child and I went to a class and the class cost £2. And at the end of the class, the teacher gave me £5 and asked me never to come back again. So I have been talking to a counsellor about it for the last 2 decades, which I feel is a sign that dancing is not for me.
Well, I'm sorry to have brought it up publicly, Julie. I didn't realise I was going to be getting into such delicate territory and I wouldn't have done it had I known.
It's a big trauma. I still have the PTSD.
Now, if people want to see you or listen to you, where would you recommend that they do it?
Well, I have a podcast called Venting and I'd love if you could listen to that. It's going quite well, which I'm delighted about because I was a bit terrified. It was the first time I was doing a podcast on my own, but the numbers are great and the feedback is great. So that's just basically me giving out and talking to my husband via a podcast, sending him messages every week. And then I will be booking a tour in, but I haven't booked that in just yet, but I'll be talking about it on the podcast anyway. So that's Venting.
Do the messages that you send through him through the medium of podcasting, do they have impact and make a difference in his overall performance as a husband?
I think so. I mean, he really loves, you know, it's funny because I'll be upstairs recording the podcast. I could go downstairs and just say whatever I want to say to him verbally, but where's the fun in that? I feel like, let's say it publicly on a podcast has a much bigger impact.
Oh, God, yeah. It's both more humiliating and more profitable. Win-win.
Yeah, for sure. I really think the return, it's really paying off for me.
Julie, lovely to talk to you. If you want to see or hear Julie J, you can get her on the podcast Venting.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.